Hello, and welcome to the Television Spotlight on the Comic Book Cage podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about a television show that we think you'll enjoy. In this episode, I'm joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on Season 8 of Green Arrow, or just Arrow, actually. It just stars Green Arrow. We're going to do this in a couple of parts. We're starting right now, having watched everything prior to the Crisis crossover, and we're going to do this for each of the different shows, record that part, and then we're going to watch at each hour of Crisis, record on that. I'll probably string those five segments together as a separate episode, might even release that early, but then replay that part of it in this, and then afterwards, at the end of the season, we'll do the remaining part. So confusing, but that's a line-wide crossover for you. Season 8 is an abbreviated season of Arrow. Where they left off at Season 7 is Mia had been born, Ollie had been kind of recruited by the Monitor, and we're like, what are they going to do this season? They've leaned hard into the Crisis arc going into it.
Well, and let's start with really the biggest difference from all the previous seasons. No Felicity.
Yes, fundamental difference. Her presence is felt and her absence is felt.
I would say her absence is felt. She's talked about and referenced, but there's not been moments where Ollie picked up the phone and basically said, you know, I feel like I should call Felicity. Only once, actually.
He did that once. And once. They've played it with a sanctity of the timeline.
Yeah.
And I get that.
And that once. But there's this aspect of she's better off acting like he's dead.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if at the end of the season, we're going to get her guest starring for an episode. And because there was a comment at the last of the pre-Crisis episodes where Ollie is telling Diggle, go find her and have these two kids raised together. They deserve that. And I'd like to see that being kind of the tail end of the series.
Well, the first episode felt like we revisited season one.
Yes.
The second episode felt like we revisited season two.
There was a lot of going back and revisiting old characters, old places, and not kind of fast-forwarding through the history of the show, but reminiscing and really, again, in this last part we saw pre-Crisis, they're back on the island, having gone full circle a few times, really. But we even got Yao Fei or whatever from the first season.
Yeah.
We got Roy back. We got the Russian friend in a previous episode. We've gotten so many aspects.
Katana,
the one who'd been on the parallel world. I'm blanking on his name. The one who was the hood there, but was one the main villain.
Adrian
Chase. Yeah, Vigilante. Yes. We got Quentin back. We got Thea back for an episode. We've gotten enough of these things that it really, they've pulled together so many threads from the previous seasons.
Well, we went to Namba Parbat and saw Nissa's sister.
Yeah, yeah. We got the whole League of Assassins stuff brought back in. I'm trying to think if there's any major thing they didn't really kind of touch back on in some way, shape, or form.
In a few different ways, we've touched on Manu's character without having
Deathstroke,
Manu.
Deathstroke, yeah. There were a few they didn't get back. We didn't get back Deathstroke. We didn't get back Shadow. And I didn't expect to get everybody back.
No, but they were definitely, they were felt. Shadow in the last episode, Deathstroke several places. We started with Ollie's kids in the future. And then the Monitor hijinxed them to the present.
Yeah. Presumably, we don't actually see that. They show up and that's the only explanation. But they took the flash forward from last season, played that out through a few episodes, and then brought the two arcs together.
Well, I was asking you as we were watching those first few episodes, kind of a where are we going with this flash forward? Because I liked in the early seasons how the island scenes played out to be their own basically movie.
I think that was something they did really good the first two seasons, less so the rest. But they still had kind of those arcs and stuff. And last season, I think with the future stuff, they did decent.
They did decent. I think they kind of got their feet under them and got better as it went on. And as they really got confident what they were doing there. But when they started this season, like you say, it felt like an epilogue to what they'd done last season.
Yeah. And an unexpected one.
Yes.
There's talk of a spinoff with the Canaries and stuff. At this point, I don't know if it'd be present day or future.
Which is an interesting quandary in a way, because they've created the opportunity for it to be either. And I also think one of the things that to me is intriguing is we have so many shows on the air that are a whole bunch of men out in the field doing the action, and then women are back in the office.
Kind of the support crew.
And they've really set up the opposite to be what they can be doing here, because William is set up to be Overwatch for them.
Exactly, exactly. He's been well used this season.
And I think they've positioned him really well to be kind of the Felicity trained me. Felicity had me with her when she was being Overwatch.
Mm-hmm. I kind of think they should do that series present day.
So do I, actually.
I think it would work better. We also got Quentin back for an episode.
Yeah, I was surprised by that.
You know, they've pulled so many things together, and again, leaning so hard into the setting up of Crisis, mm-hmm. it's not been a subplot, it's been the main plot for the season.
They did a lot of really good stuff for the Laurel character,
mm-hmm.
because we've been seeing her waffle, really.
Yeah.
Between what side of the fence is she on, and in the episode with Quentin, they gave her a very healing moment with him.
They did good there. They also did good in the Russia episode with the Bratva and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
With leopards don't change their spot. Maybe you did.
Yeah.
So I thought that was well done, giving her the opportunity to betray Ollie and not.
Yes.
Was set up well. The destruction of Earth 2 was well done.
Well, and her responses to it.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of she had the opportunity, she believed, to betray Ollie and get her Earth back.
Yes. It was a test of character, and it set her up as being Black Canary versus having been Black Siren.
Yes.
So that arc is been earned.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think who else we got. We got Tommy Merlin back.
Yes.
As well as Malcolm and the mom, mm-hmm. Ollie's mom for a bit.
That was part of the revisiting of seasons.
Yeah, I mean, they covered a surprising amount of ground in, what, 8 episodes?
Well, there have been quite a few times this season where I've had to ask you, are we on a different Earth? Are we in a dream sequence? I mean, kind of playing through all the possibilities.
And there were a couple of times it was unclear, because they're going much more multiversal and time loop type stuff than this show ever has.
Yeah.
Whereas that's more fitting the Flash stuff.
I would agree with that, yeah.
But there were a few other things that surprised me that they went to it, but I understood why they did. The bit with Roy losing the arm.
See, that, on the one hand, that shocked me, but for me, on the other hand, we'd seen Roy in the future with both arms.
That was part of why I hadn't expected it, but at one point in the comics, that happened to the character. So there's aspects where they are still pulling aspects from the comics and saying, okay, let's use this.
But see, for me, it was also a way of saying the 2040 we've shown you just got changed.
It couldn't happen the way it did,
mm-hmm.
because things have changed. Absolutely. The future is not set. And it's an interesting thing for them to have done the episode after basically showing Ollie your future can't be changed.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure where they're going with some of that. They had been setting up Lila as Harbinger. On and off for a while now. At the end of this episode we just watched, pre-crisis, it very much, you know, that's where she's at.
Mm-hmm.
And the costume was a fairly faithful adaptation from the comics.
Okay.
In the comics, she's got kind of wild blonde curly hair and stuff, and like I think a red headpiece or something she didn't have here. But by and large, it's like, yes, I recognize the character costume. So I appreciate where they're going, where they've been, and how they're doing a nice kind of merge of thematic aspects from the comics, yet well tailoring it to their continuity and their storyline.
Mm-hmm.
even bringing the kids from the future back, one of the things that happened in Crisis on Infinite Earths, the comic, was the timelines kind of melded and mishmashed. You had dinosaurs going down the streets of Metropolis or Gotham or wherever. You know, you had the Legion of Superheroes and stuff. So starting to at least get some aspect of that here was nice. So I think they've done a good job on this. I think it's been fun. Going into the season, I was unsure where they were going to go.
Well, they seem to have approached it with the attitude of, in every episode, we collected a piece of what was needed to create a device that, from my perspective, they called it a weapon, but it felt like it triggered Crisis.
It triggered Lila to become Harbinger.
Yes.
Just before the Crisis happened. And the question is, are we ever going to get a reveal of the Monitor's grand plan?
Yeah.
And that may be one of the first episode, probably the first episode of Crisis. So I'm curious, again, how they adapt that series to this continuity and such. We've had some good fight scenes this season, mm-hmm. some better than others. We've certainly, again, had a ton of different characters show up.
Well, and it was a nice nostalgic tribute to their own series. It worked well in that respect.
Well, yeah, and that's, I think, what I really enjoyed about it. I think if you only watched the season, never having watched the rest, you'd be like, what's going on? Where are they pulling this? It's just all over the place.
Yeah.
But having watched the previous seven seasons and recognizing the callbacks,
yeah,
and they made it fairly easy to do that.
Well, when they challenged Mia to ring the bell
mm-hmm.
with the Bratva and stuff like that, and at the end of that episode, when Anatoly said, you know, let us hug as brothers, and Ollie's like, not Bratva brothers, brothers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's the way that relationship has evolved over all these seasons.
Well, even in that episode, this eighth one we just watched, pre-Crisis, where they're back on Lian Yu, and we start seeing the plane, the cave, all the various places, including the inside of the Amazo ship.
Yeah.
You know, where he met Nikolai, I think it is. I keep forgetting his name. But the Russian.
Yeah.
They, again, did such a quick kind of a recap, and they didn't have to do it with a previously on and go back to here's the ring the bell thing or the callbacks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't catch it, you're not losing much, but if you catch it, you gain more.
But I think part of why I noticed we didn't have Manu in any of the episodes this season is because they showed the wreck plane where he had camped out with Manu.
Yeah, the other character they didn't bring back was Ravager. The one from Firefly, I'm blanking on her name, the one who played River. Summer Glau.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, there's a couple of mm-hmm. characters they could have brought back or whatever, but I think it, having Billy Wintergreen in the suit and stuff instead of Manu and stuff, instead of, you know, Slade, kind of worked better anyways.
It made sense because it was the people who were originally here and died on the island.
Mm-hmm.
So for the way they were doing kind of the mystical properties of the island, it worked.
Well, and we'd seen the mystical side of Lian Yu a few times before.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought they played fair there, even though the last time we'd seen it had been bombed back to the Stone Age, and here it was, you know, lush and beautiful as ever. So again, I am pleased with how the season's gone. I'm looking forward to the crossover, and they've got maybe three or four episodes after that?
That's what I was wondering. I was thinking it was only a 10-episode season.
I thought I had seen an episode for Crisis, an episode titled Arrow and the Canaries, and Fade Out, at least.
Right, and we ended on 7 tonight.
Oh, so that'd be 8, 9, and 10. You're right. Okay, my bad. Yeah, 10 episodes. That's fair. They only did this in 7?
Yeah.
Wow. That kind of makes sense, because it's roughly an episode per season, and they blur the lines a little bit here and there, but they covered a lot of ground.
Mm-hmm. They did, and they did it nicely.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't feel like a Clips episode.
It didn't feel like a Clips episode or one where you needed a PhD in their continuity to understand it.
Yeah.
You could follow the things as they were going, and if you caught the references, great. If you didn't, again, no harm, no foul.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave the context clues fairly well.
We watched 2 episodes tonight?
Yes.
I don't think we saw a single canary cry in the 2 episodes.
We saw one briefly when Dinah used it to take out the bomb in the first of the two episodes tonight.
Interesting. Okay.
The time loop one.
Okay.
But yeah, the canary cries were not getting used as much. And that was the one thing we didn't get this season, was we never got Sarah Lance, who easily could have been in a few different episodes fairly appropriately.
Yeah, she got quite a few mentions, but no appearances.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. She'll obviously show up in the Legends of Tomorrow episode of the crossover.
Yeah. Palmer Tech got a mention. Smoke Tech got a mention.
Queen Consolidated, I think, also got a mention or two.
Yeah.
I'd have to do some serious thinking to find out if there was any major thing, because we even went back to the original mansion.
We went back to the club that Ollie was running.
We got, obviously, the bunker. I'd be hard-pressed to name any major thing that we didn't kind of revisit in some way, shape, or form, if not physically or with the character, at least got referenced or the callback for.
Well, and in the first episode, when Ollie was on alternate Earth and got rescued from Leah and you just later than when he'd been rescued on our Earth, and it's kind of playing out with those subtle differences, like Mom married Malcolm instead and stuff. But then Diggle gets hired to be his bodyguard. And
yeah, I thought that was fun. And we get a replay if he's trying to dive out the car like he did in the first episode. But this time the doors are locked. He's like, hey, fool me once.
Yes, yes.
Oh, it's you.
Yes, it was beautiful.
They did have a couple of times where they kept us guessing of, is this the person we know or is this an alternate timeline duplicate? Which is, again, unusual for this show, but fits within the larger continuity of the franchise of the multiverse of shows.
Yeah. And they played it nicely.
Yeah. So I've been pleased. I think this was a good lead up into Crisis. I think the tag at the end with Nash Wells, if you're only a fan of Arrow, you're going to be like, who is this?
Yes. And where is he?
And where is he and what's going on? And I'm wondering if when we watch the Flash stuff, which is probably what we're going to do next, if there's, because we've got two episodes there, if there's a piece or two that kind of connects us in on that.
Interesting. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how each of the episodes leading to Crisis ends, as in, do they all end with the Nash clip or do each of them have something different?
I think each is going to have a little something different. I expect the Nash one for Flash. I don't really expect that for Supergirl or Batwoman.
Interesting. Yeah, I'll be curious.
I hope Batwoman does something to better anchor where all this is happening versus last year's Elseworlds tie-in and stuff like that. But overall, again, I'm enjoying it. So the next part of this episode will be our segment on the Arrow version of the crossover, which I think is part 4, maybe. And then when the season ends, two episodes later, we'll come back and record on that.
It'll feel like forever later.
So this episode will probably go out, probably. I'll figure this out when I get it all edited and whatnot. Probably get the Crisis one out sooner rather than later after in January when all that's done. This episode, probably after that, and then as the seasons end for the different shows, as we get them recorded.
Makes sense.
All right, with that, we're going to pause here and eventually watch Crisis on Infinite Earths. Joining me for this episode is my sister Kay, and we're going to have a spoiler-filled discussion on the CW Arrowverse Crisis on Infinite Earths crossover. We've already done one episode covering the first three parts. In this episode, we're going to cover parts 4 and 5. Now, since it had been a few weeks, we had the time. We figured, let's go ahead and rewatch the first three parts in rapid succession. Rolled right into the fourth, and we've only watched that part, which is Arrow.
Well, and I think rewatching the first three parts helped for multiple reasons. It helped in terms of freshen our mind.
Get back into the story, absolutely.
It also meant I felt less guilty talking to you during the first three parts and saying things like, this means we're in Flash time, right?
Yes, there were one or two things I did, I think, miss the first time around. There's a lot going on.
There really is. And there were a couple times where when we were watching it the second time, we were able to say, okay, wait, let's count the characters in the scene, because it feels like, and maybe it was just filming schedules, etc., but like Kate Kane comes to mind, as it felt like, shouldn't she be in the scene when Ollie dies?
Yeah, when Ollie dies, she's nowhere to be found. There's a couple of things where it's easy to lose track of where a couple of characters are. Now, part of it is There were so many characters in this.
There were, and when you consider that the casts of definitely four shows, depending if you want to count Legends of Tomorrow, because with them being the fifth episode, I don't know how fully engaged in the crossover some people feel they are.
Well, technically, part five, which we have not watched yet, we're going to do that shortly, is episode zero of season five of Legends.
See, and that's what I'm thinking.
Which is just kind of weird.
But that's why I'm thinking, you know, it's hard to say, you know, like, in this Arrow episode, we didn't have Diggle.
Yeah, we did.
Did we?
The post-death scene or whatever with Katie Cassidy over...
Oh, that's true, in the flashback-ish memory.
Part of this is so much goes on. It's easy to lose track of stuff. Because where we start this episode is we've got the seven Paragons, minus one who got replaced, stuck at the Vanishing Point.
Mm-hmm.
And the Superman, who was the Paragon of Truth, that was the Man of Steel. The Man of Steel? Which was the Brandon Routh? It was the Brandon Routh Superman from whichever movie it was, taking, you know, all that. He gets replaced by the Supergirl Lex Luthor.
And as you interestingly pointed out, he used the Book of Destiny to literally replace Superman as the Paragon of Truth.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, well into the episode, he basically dares somebody to ask him a question outright. And when they do, he gives an honest answer.
It wasn't so much that he dared them. It's like you could just ask. But I think they could have reworked that dialogue to give a sense of, it's not like I'm going to lie to you.
Mm.
And set the stage for he's the Paragon of Truth, because that plays in at the end of the episode.
Yeah.
They need these Paragons to kind of relight those aspects of the universe.
Yeah.
And I'm curious how much of those seven Paragons, those attributes, could possibly play into the emotional spectrum of the Green Lantern Corps.
Oh, that's interesting.
Love is certainly one of them, but the others don't really fall quite in line. It's the same number.
Yeah.
And it was interesting, and the reason I mentioned the Green Lantern Corps is part of this episode, we get the backstory on the Monitor and how he was a scientist on Multus who, you know, basically kicked everything off inadvertently.
And referred to someone else as the Monitor.
Yes. The person who was monitoring the experiment. Now, what's interesting is those scenes are very similar to what was seen in the comic book Crisis, and granted, co-writer of this episode was Marv Wolfman, writer of the original Crisis. The difference was it was Krona who had done that part and had seen the unseeable, and it was sacrilege to go back and view the dawn of time for obvious reasons, as we see in the story. It doesn't work out well. So to have that essentially be the origin of the Monitor in this world, I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a number of things that throughout this crossover, certainly in this episode, are harkened back to what had happened in the comics, but in different ways. You know, the battle at the dawn of time against the anti-Monitor and stuff like that definitely was in the comics. Obviously, it plays out differently here. Didn't have the concept of the Paragons in the comics. We have them here. The whole bit of spending time in the Speed Force didn't happen because by that point, Barry Allen had died in the comics. Supergirl had died in Crisis, I believe, both by this point. Because this would have been post-issue 8 where one of those deaths happened. I forget which was when. But also, the whole Speed Force didn't exist in the comics back then.
Mm-hmm.
That was a later invention. So I liked how they were paying tribute to and staying along the kind of the basic plot line, but adapting it and making it work for what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And using Oliver as the Spectre, completely, you know, they'd set that up in the third part, so it's not completely unexpected, but prior to watching any of Crisis, hadn't seen that coming. And his powers and abilities here are different than they are in the comics, but it makes sense, and you can see the similarities, you know, conceptually. So I thought that was pretty cool, and they spent a lot of time basically just kind of, again, getting some of that backstory for how things happened and putting the characters where they needed to be to restart the universe.
But they're still at the dawn of time.
The way it flashed white there at the end.
Okay.
I'm not so sure.
Interesting.
The very final bit there was a little ambiguous to me.
Okay.
Because it could have just as easily been Barry could have grabbed them, they could have ran somewhere, but I didn't think that's what had happened. So I don't know what happens, where the fifth part picks up.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that question, definitely. I also liked how when they were kind of stuck in the Speed Force and they had to find each other, it was, you know, where were the connections made and stuff. And we get back to various key moments in some of the past crossovers, specifically the Elseworlds one from last year and the Invasion one from a few years ago. So I thought those were well used. A little harder to get Batwoman into one of those flashbacks because, well, she'd only been in one crossover.
Yeah, but hers was actually in some respects better used because it was, yeah, this isn't my memory, but this is a moment I can learn from.
Mm-hmm. I can see the parallels and I can... Well, and it also showed the people don't trust, but they forge the alliance over time.
Yeah.
Aspect, which was a common theme across many of those scenes. So I thought that was well done. There was a lot, I think, happening in here. It felt like a fairly full episode, but it also had a little bit of almost clip show-itis.
Yes.
And it wasn't a clip show, but there was enough flashbacks harkening into memories and things like that. And you had commented at one point when we were watching it how there was a scene when they had tied into the Elseworlds one from last year where we got a shot of Barry, shot of Ollie back and forth. And you're like, we're getting a lot of one-shots. Could they not coordinate schedules?
Yeah.
Which is entirely possible because, again, the number of characters that were in here was just staggering.
Mm-hmm.
The one that surprised the hell out of me, and I did not see this coming, and I thought it was a really cool touch, was when we got the movie Flash.
Yeah.
And it took me a minute. It's like, I think that's who that is. And part of why he was hard to recognize is even though that actor was cast as the movie Flash, like 2 days after the Flash TV show started, the screen time he had in this episode, which is maybe a minute or two, is a meaningful percentage of that actor's time on screen as the Flash.
Mm-hmm.
Because other than the Justice League film, we got a fraction of, maybe a minute. We probably got as much time in Batman v Superman for him as the Flash as we got in this episode.
Yeah.
And having those two kind of face off or whatever was a nice moment.
Mm-hmm.
And goes towards that, again, that bigger picture of a multiverse here.
Mm-hmm.
So I did not expect that at all, and it was a nice moment to have. How they seem to have kept that pretty much under wraps, don't know, but kudos to them for doing that.
Yes.
And, I mean, I had been trying to avoid spoilers on this, but didn't feel I had to go to any kind of Herculean efforts. Now, granted, we're watching this, like, the day after it initially aired, but even then, there are a lot of times where some spoilers are almost unavoidable at times.
Mm-hmm.
So, I felt them being picked as the Paragons makes sense now.
Yes. Now.
Their time at the Vanishing Point seemed like a little bit of a waste of time, but it needed, you know, Ollie needed time in Purgatory to get trained, although Purgatory, does it have time?
Mm-hmm. Well, the Vanishing Point, though, was a nice callback for Legends.
Yes.
I'll give them that.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
It was also a little bit of a, let's kind of test Lex Luthor's mettle and see if he's only here because he was going to survive at any cost, even if that meant stealing somebody else's seat in the escape pod equivalent,
mm-hmm.
or if he's actually going to try and contribute, if he's going to pull his own weight,
yeah,
or if he's dead weight.
There was definitely he was trying to pull his own weight, but he had kind of nothing else to do with his time. I felt the way Barry had basically bounced forward in time in the Vanishing Point, which is outside of time, but it has time, trying to use the Speed Force. And meanwhile, everybody else had either been meditating or working out or, you know, whatever.
Let's not discuss food.
Yeah, apparently that was not really an issue. Neither were sleeping quarters, etc. But I don't expect them to have figured all of that out.
It's a magic place.
I guess. It's a shame none of it seemed to survive from the Legends.
Well, that describes many places the Legends go and encounter.
I did like how in the fight scene, Canary was basically commenting on how they usually mess things up for the better.
Yes.
You know, and that was a nice moment. So even though we mainly had the core seven plus Ollie, so eight, we get a number of other characters through the flashbacks and the Speed Force stuff and all of that. So even with this episode, which was the most bottled of them, there's still just a ton of people they had to juggle to make this happen.
Yeah.
So I think they've been doing a really good job keeping the story moving.
Well, at this point, we've effectively dealt with crisis, it feels like. And now we need to go into repercussions.
Well, this gets us up to about the end of issue 10 or so of the original Crisis, which was 12 issues. And I'm trying to remember again, it's been a while since I've read it. There came a point where they kind of fixed everything, and then it was waking up in the new reality.
Yeah.
The Golden Age, Clark Kent going into the One Earth Daily Planet, you know, thinking he's the editor, going into Perry's office, and Perry's like, what the hell? And regular Clark comes in and, you know, introduces him as his uncle, you know, and of course they look just alike or whatever kind of a thing, give or take 20 years. So there's some of that aspect I expect to get in the Legends of Tomorrow episode, and also a resetting of the status quo. Because where this ended up with them kind of restarting the Big Bang or what have you, it implied singular universe. But that could have just been phrasing.
Yeah.
Whether we have a multiverse at the end of this, I'm still not sure yet.
Yeah. Too soon to tell for me.
Mm-hmm. Well, because we haven't experienced that new reality yet.
Yeah.
You know, are we now in one world where Gotham, Freeland, National City, Star City, you know, Central City all are in the same planet or not? I don't know. And gut feeling is it wouldn't surprise me if they go that way. But they've also kind of dealt with the multiple Earths fine, that I don't feel they have to go that way.
Mm-hmm.
And particularly with the introduction of the movie Flash, I feel they're better off leaving it as a multiverse.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
One more episode to find out.
Anything else we want to discuss on this, or do we just want to kind of get to that next one?
I'm ready for the next one.
Same here. This is one where they were airing them back to back, so I think they wanted them to be watched back to back. And this one felt fairly, I don't want to say self-contained, but like a complete chapter.
Yes.
Because we got from one stopping point to another stopping point, and now it's like, can they land the ending?
Yes.
And I'm hoping they can. I'm thinking they can. Let's find out.
Okay.
I know we said we would do the Arrow episode in three parts, but I've decided we're going to do it in four. We've already done the first main part of the series. We've already done the part that's the Crisis crossover. There were two episodes left, and we're going to talk in this segment on just the ninth episode, and then later, after we've watched the final one, we'll talk about that. The reason I decided to do that is this episode was not effectively, it was literally a backdoor pilot for a new show.
The whole episode was in 2040.
Yeah.
We had no Diggle. We had no Oliver Queen.
We saw a picture of Oliver Queen, but we had no Diggle. We had Wild Dog.
We had Reference.
We had Reference to him.
As mayor, yeah.
But we had Mia. We had Diana. We had Laurel. We had Zoe. We had William, JJ, Connor. That was about it. So it was mainly taking the crew from the future time frame, and basically after Crisis, it's a totally different timeline.
Mm-hmm.
Star City has thrived over the last 20 years. It's a very peaceful place. No crime in it in 20 years.
Mia and William seem to have grown up together.
Yeah, seem to have grown up together. No mention of what happened with Felicity.
I think we'll get that next episode.
I think next episode they go back to present day, and that may set the scene for it. And it could be that Felicity potentially could recur or guest star if this gets picked up to a show. It was a little bit of a back and forth in terms of, okay, it's a totally different timeline, everything's nice and happy and nobody remembers stuff, and then suddenly people are starting to remember stuff because of plot contrivances, and doing that without the Martian Manhunter to kind of do the tap on the forehead sort of a thing. They found a way around that. I wasn't crazy about it, but fine, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the tail end, we had a few more people remember that we didn't want to remember, so it's, I think, going to be a series about almost an identity crisis of sorts. You know, what people know you are and what you actually are being very different things.
Well, and basically, who do you believe you are?
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe you are the person that you, the life you have actually lived, and the person others believe you are? Or Are you the person you could have been had things been different?
Can you choose your fate, or is it just picked out for you? And it's going to be interesting to see if this does get picked up. I think doing a show in a future time frame always has some challenges.
Mm-hmm.
This was not a radically future.
No.
It was just basically a bigger city. There was a couple of different looking cars here and there, but even those weren't really focused on much.
No, the tech was subtly more future, like projection screens, if you will.
Stuff that is imaginable now and seems like, 20 years easily, no problem.
Yeah.
Not one of these crazy, suddenly everybody's got flying cars or something. So I don't think that would be problematic. But this is something where, really, they spent not only the early part of this season, but a lot of last season setting up the 2040 timeline, setting it up, you know, in one dystopic way. Now it's suddenly a very different way. But we already know these characters and what their status quo was. We got a good sense of what their status quo is and how it's kind of conflicting and competing with that other one. So it's an interesting setup. If this does go to series, I think the pilot episode has a definite challenge in front of it of reasserting all of what we got in this episode in a new and different way, and really giving us a trajectory of where is that series going.
Well, and it basically has to start with rescuing William.
I don't think it does. There's nothing to say he has to be in the series.
Yeah.
He doesn't remember the past.
True.
He wasn't used as the tech guy for this. It could be that the plot line is rescuing him and it's just not resolved. It's the ongoing, you know, can we save him?
Boy, I was afraid you were going to go with his death is what triggers everything to go to hell in a handbasket, where they thought they just saved the person that their death was the trigger.
It's possible. I think that would be a mistake. I think...
That's why I was afraid you were going
to
say.
No, I think they need to keep William in the show, and I would have him as a regular. I'd have had him as the Felicity type.
That's what I was hoping for.
But we saw none of that here.
I mean, in general, I don't like when shows flip genders just to flip.
Mm-hmm.
But in this case, because they've set William up from the time he was a teenager to be the tech savant, he makes sense to be the guy doing all the Felicity stuff for them.
Well, yeah, he'd been trained, you know, from early on, and in this timeline has, you know, another set of training. The fact that he didn't, you know, get set up to remember was disappointing, but they could easily do in a actual pilot episode. They rescue him, they realize it's dangerous for him not to know, they give him the memories, that gives the audience coming in on that pilot episode a on-ramp into the series.
Yeah.
You know, from his vantage point. I think there's a lot to be done with Mia and William as kind of, again, that inverse of Ollie and Felicity.
Mm-hmm.
But the difference is they're siblings who grew up together in this timeline, yet also grew up apart in a previous timeline.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of interesting relationship dynamic you can do that way.
Well, and just as Arrow had fun finding the balance for a couple in that working situation, honestly, I think there's the same interesting balance to be found for siblings in that close working situation.
Well, and the more I think about it, the more I think they've mandated they go down that path. Because that ending scene, not only with William being taken, but when Mia is looking at the hose and the rock and recognizing the pattern in the tattoo,
yeah,
that implies that there is a family legacy aspect to this that without William, you'd be missing kind of half of it.
It's either that or because the Hosen connects back to Lian Yu.
Yes.
So now I want to remember, in other words, the history of the rock better.
Who got it from whom first?
Yeah. How did it get to Ollie?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't recall because, again, we're 8 seasons in on this.
Yeah.
It just seems like it was enough of his story and he was enough of a part of that story.
Mm-hmm.
That to not have William in a spinoff show is a missed opportunity.
Yeah, that's how I feel.
And, I mean, a lot of these actors have been playing these roles for, you know, literally a season and a half now. You've got the advantage of, okay, with Crisis, you can retweak characters. And they've done that quite a bit with Dinah and stuff like that.
Well, they softened Dinah.
Mm-hmm.
They've put her at the age she was, but 20 years in the future, with basically no past and no idea why that's what happened to her.
Well, and leaving that as one of the mysteries they need to unravel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how and why did she kind of skip over a few decades? And there's the lingering kind of unasked question of why did Laurel come here to begin with? And maybe we'll get some of that over in Legends. Maybe we won't. I don't know.
Which is an interesting question, too.
Because Sarah was mentioned a few times by Laurel, presumably her sister or, you know, otherworldly sister because different Earths.
Yeah.
But the Legends never actually got mentioned by name.
Yeah.
The Wave Rider didn't get mentioned by name. The Time Bureau didn't get mentioned. So there's a lot of, okay, what's going on with that? This is one where I do think it'd be fun to see them continue the story. Is kind of an Arrow of the Next Generation in a very literal sense. But as I said, there are those challenges as to setting it up and keeping it accessible.
Mm-hmm.
As far as a backdoor pilot went, this was something that is unusual for a backdoor pilot, where it followed more the flow of the main series story. Historically, when we've gotten backdoor pilots, they would literally almost Shanghai an episode of their show they were doing. You know, the production company would use it to launch another one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm trying to think of some classic examples. A good one that didn't go to a spinoff series was an episode of MacGyver, the original series, where they brought in the Coltons, the bounty hunters, with the hopes of maybe spinning that off. That didn't happen. Other more classic ones are when you had, like, Laverne and Shirley showing up on Happy Days, or you had Mork showing up on Happy Days, versus this was almost more of taking some plot threads and spinning them out to another show, more like Joni Loves Chachi.
Yeah.
There are many other shows that have been kind of set up and spun out of other shows. The Jeffersons out of All in the Family and stuff. There's also been a couple out of, I want to say, either Matlock or Hard Case and McCormick and a few other shows like that. Jake and the Fat Man, I think, spun out of, or
yeah,
something like that. I'm just trying to remember.
And didn't Simon and Simon and Riptide?
I think Riptide spun out of Simon and Simon.
Yeah.
And it was one of those where you just don't see the lead characters much. These other people kind of come in, take over, and then, they did well. We'll do a show on them, and back to regular Simon and Simon next week.
Well, with Murder, She Wrote, Angela Lansbury had her contract written for one season where it was basically she was having issues because she lived in Ireland,
mm-hmm.
but it filmed here. And it was, I simply can't do a 22 to 24 episode season. I need a shorter season. So they say, okay, you'll only be in, and I forget, it was like 18 episodes, if that may. And the rest, you'll do the bookends.
Mm-hmm.
And so she would be filmed opening a letter. Oh, I haven't heard from so-and-so in so long. And then it would feel like a backdoor pilot.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was genuinely written like one of the private investigators had, I think, two of those episodes. And it really felt like, I think we're trying to spin this guy out to his own show. And there was another one with a private investigator and his kid. There was another one with a cop teaching a class of students. And later in an interview, she said, yeah, they probably all felt like backdoor pilots. But the truth was, I simply couldn't film the whole season.
Well, what was so interesting with this episode is it was clearly setting up a backdoor pilot.
Mm.
As far as I know, it has not been approved, but I had been thinking before that it had been, so I'm not sure.
I'm curious where it's at.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty safe bet. We'll just see if they go with it or not, if that's their intent, or if it's just, hey, we've got another episode to do. I think if they were just filling an episode to get out to 10 for this, this is not what they would have done.
I think that they were probably 95% sure this was going to series,
mm-hmm.
and the only way it wasn't going to series was if nobody tuned into this episode.
If this episode tanked, they had the ability to not pull the trigger.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's happened.
Because this episode was so widely publicized.
Yeah.
As for what it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
That you knew and you could skip it if you weren't going to be interested in a spinoff.
Also, just by advertising it that way, it allowed them to do the test balloon response early.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, if we're getting bad stuff on this, we burned an episode, who cares?
Yeah.
But we know ahead of time, but oh, people are interested, they're intrigued, now they watch it, do we get good feedback, you know?
Yeah.
So more of a hedging of the bets. I'd be surprised if it doesn't get picked up. It may not be on the fall schedule, but we've also seen things like Black Lightning and Legends of Tomorrow be, you know, kind of mid-season sort of shows. And it may be one that does a shorter run that alternates with Legends or something like that.
I'm curious, given all the crossovers they like to do, it'll be in a different time frame. So either Wave Rider has to bring people back for the crossovers, or they're left out of the crossovers, or they feel repercussions from whatever happens in the crossovers because it radiates out across time.
I would actually like to see them, if it were to go to series, depending what crossovers they're planning for other stuff, they could almost do their own crossover between this. There's no reason Nora can't exist in this timeline in the future.
Mm-hmm.
You've got the Legends of Tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
And if you wanted to do the now adult kids of Superman and Lois,
that would be funny.
Or a Batman Beyond kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have a regular crossover and have the next gen kind of crossover.
Yeah.
That maybe they feel the repercussions. Hey, our parents dealt with this 20 years ago, but we knew this was going to come out someday, sort of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some fun stuff they could do there.
Yeah.
And I think having them periodically make trips back two decades can be done, but I'd almost rather not see them do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, the flip side, they could have Barry get, you know, lost in time or something like that, too, or some other character.
True.
So there are options.
I like your idea with Nora and the others of their generation
mm-hmm.
popping up once a season for their own equivalent of a crossover, even if it's separate storyline issue.
Yeah. I think setting up a what is going on in Gotham in 2040 at some point, or what's going on in National City or Metropolis and stuff like that, has some opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a strong cast. I think the fact that they've had a season and a half to really build these characters up, establish them, even though they're reestablishing them and then reestablishing them again in this, a little bit head-turning, but it works.
But they've given us time to grow to like them, to be curious about them, and to be intrigued by the many sides of them.
Well, and it sets up a who knows what and how long can people kind of bluff or whatever.
Mm.
Particularly with Mia's relationship with various people and stuff having turned in a couple of ways.
Yeah.
And they've got the ability to take other members of the Arrow cast and have them show up as just older versions of themselves like they'd been doing in the 2040 stuff last season.
Yeah.
And earlier this season. I mean, I don't think we ever really saw Diggle in that time frame.
Mm-mm.
But we saw a few of the others.
No, we saw Wild Dog Ramirez
mm-hmm.
as mayor. We saw Dinah.
Saw Felicity.
Yeah.
Saw Roy.
That's right. Yeah.
Didn't see Thea.
Mm-mm.
But regardless of who we'd seen before or after, before, you know, the timeline is now different.
Mm-hmm.
So even when we see them again, they could be different.
Yeah.
So I'm curious. To me, they set up too many things to not resolve.
Yeah.
Now, if they choose to do just a 2-hour movie to kind of deal with it and close it off, that works. I think it's more likely to go to series.
I hope so.
Whether it's a 20-episode season or not, don't know.
I hope it goes to series.
I hope so, too. I think it comes down to how full is the CW lineup because they've already greenlit the Superman and Lois show.
Mm-hmm.
And even with Arrow kind of going off the air, they just got a ton of stuff.
Yeah.
But that's a good problem to have.
Mm-hmm.
If they can keep that going and they can continue to branch out more and more DC characters to where they can do, you know, kind of, you know, other shows. To me, what I would be doing if I were them is I would be doing either a quarterly or every 4 months or something like that, kind of a 2-hour movie of the week.
Mm.
To either focus on a lesser character or to introduce a character. Something to where you can test the waters on some of this different stuff. Maybe give Elongated Man a 2-hour movie and stuff next season or something. Here, you know, maybe I'm trying to think what would be a good kind of Arrow character to do that with. You know, what happened with Curtis and stuff 20 years down?
I was about to say Mr. Terrific.
Or even set back in the past. I mean, imagine if you've got in 2040 stuff going on in the Canaries, and it there's a backstory you need to tell, and you could tell something set in some intervening time, maybe halfway between, and kind of bridge the gap that way.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot they could do. I thought this was a good episode. I think it was a decent backdoor pilot. I think it puts certain challenges and necessities on a proper pilot episode for it, figuring not everyone will have watched this that might be interested in that series. But I think it's one that I think they should take to series, and I'm curious to see if they do and how they do with it.
Yeah, I agree.
So anything else?
Nope.
All right. So once that final episode has aired, we will watch that and really just see if they have landed the ending on the series.
I have high hopes they'll land it.
I think they will. I'm curious what they plan to do to kind of finish that off, particularly having jumped, you know, 20 years forward for this and then presumably back. But regardless, I can't imagine they would do something so horrific that it would really taint the legacy they've built up for this show.
Yeah.
Because 8 seasons, 7.5, however you want to count it, sure, not as long as, say, Smallville or something, which is, I think, the longest ongoing DC superhero-based show ever. But you've got to factor in the fact that it spun off Flash, Arrow, Black Lightning, Legends of Tomorrow, Batwoman, now a Superman and Lois, and potentially a Canaries show. Hell of a legacy that they've built up off of a show that really could have gone either way.
Yeah.
So looking forward to seeing how they land the ending. So we have watched the finale of Arrow.
Mm-hmm.
And overall, I think they landed the ending. There's still some lingering questions, both with this episode and the last, as to are they going to do this spinoff and a few questions around that. But I appreciated how there were some callbacks in this finale to the beginning of the show, early decisions and stuff that Ollie had made, and just the number of kind of cameos and guest appearances they had.
Well, and they approached the fact that there were things that couldn't be changed in Crisis.
Yeah, he couldn't change his father's death because that would have precluded the path that got him down the road.
Yeah.
And frankly, it would have been such a seismic change anyways.
Yeah.
But little things, bringing Tommy back, his mom back, Quentin Lance.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a number of things that puts those characters back into play, either for other crossovers current day or for the spinoff future day.
Well, and speaking of characters still in play, Diggle and his wife are moving to Metropolis.
I was surprised by that because that sets them up as possible for use over in the Superman and Lois show.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the scene at the end where Diggle presumably gets the Green Lantern ring was a little, almost, I don't say gratuitous, but kind of tacked on. Now, flip side, they could spin him out into his own show.
Very true.
And I think there's some definite grounds for doing that. You know, they've given him an origin similar-ish to Hal Jordan's in the comics. In the comics, if he is John Stewart, and his father's name was Stewart, they've referenced that in an episode this season or last.
Yeah.
And there was a line over in, it might have even been Black Lightning, implying that Lynn Stewart had a brother John.
Oh, interesting.
So now, you know, there could be that. But in the comics, John Stewart was the backup Green Lantern for when Hal couldn't fulfill his obligations or whatever. One of the first times I read the character, I don't think it was his original appearance, though. Hal had slipped in the shower or whatever, hit his head, was knocked unconscious. The ring scanned, made sure he was okay, but Justice League needs a Green Lantern, so let's go find the backup, and off they go. So you can't really do that kind of an origin without Hal. And Hal's was basically a Green Lantern ship crashes to Earth, and he finds him, which is similar-ish to what we got here. Of course, it was hard not to watch that scene thinking, how many times have we seen the shuttle pod, you know, crash to Earth over on Supergirl?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, yeah.
So, that felt, again, like opening a door for a character versus closing one.
Yes.
And they danced around bringing Mia back from the future after the events of last episode and handled it well. They didn't really, I think, put Dinah in they didn't kind of close the gap between the end of this episode and where she picked up last episode.
Right. She rode off into the sunset.
Yeah. Whereas in the other episode, it's like, I woke up here the day after the funeral.
No memories, but no record of my having been in the police.
Something happened between this and the 20 years that the previous episode picked up on.
Yeah.
Now, I'd read online an interesting theory as to who's the big bad for that spinoff.
Oh, okay.
And the theory held water. Whether it's going to be true or not, don't know, but it was going to be, or could possibly be, Laurel.
Mm.
She's got the tech to
make people remember.
Make people remember. The motive is basically, you know, Ollie didn't fix her life or whatever, or, you know, kind of resentment.
Yeah.
Over all of that.
I hope not.
Yeah. But if not, then they've still got quite a bit to explain.
We've been redeeming her character for the past season or two.
Yes. The other problem with it is one of the things the internet theory had was that Laurel knew who to go in terms of JJ and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That Laurel in this time frame would not have had. So anyways, if they go with the spinoff, we'll see. I think they did a good job closing this off. And again, particularly at the funeral scene, just cameo after cameo after cameo.
Yeah.
And there's a ton more they could have brought in, but they went a lot further than I had expected.
Yeah.
So I was pleased with that. And it was a good kind of end cap, pretty much did what I had expected it would do, knowing it was going to be an episode or two after Crisis. Kind of that epilogue feeling.
Yeah, but they did one thing that made it feel unlikely that William would come home to live with Felicity. He was kidnapped because he's Oliver Queen's son.
Yeah, but he's not safe with the grandparents, so you could argue. It would have been nice if they had gotten some kind of conversation between Felicity and young William of, do you want to meet your sister?
Yes.
And kind of giving that a clear trajectory.
Well, and now we have Queen Mansion back.
Yes.
So it is a different safety situation or security situation
mm-hmm.
than the apartment they had.
Well, and Roy and Thea may stick around.
Yeah.
You know, there are a lot of things that were left kind of open-ended and kind of give people the happy ending sort of thing.
Yeah.
And even, you know, Ollie and Felicity get that when we kind of see the end of kind of last season's with her and the monitor, kind of what's on the other side of that portal.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought that was well handled. You know, on the one hand, I'm hoping they go with the spinoff. And on the other hand, I'm also hoping some of these characters stay in some sort of play periodically through, you know, Supergirl, Flash, Black Lightning, the Superman and Lois show.
Yeah.
There's a lot of opportunities for these characters. You know, I think they told an insane amount of story over the 8 seasons.
Yes.
And there was no reason initially to expect the show to be successful, much less to the level of success it had, not just going 8 years, but spinning out Flash, Supergirl, Black Lightning, you know, Legends of Tomorrow, a Superman and Lois show, to have such a large universe of characters.
Yeah.
To be able to do something like the Crisis crossover and stuff. Unfathomable. I mean, I would say prior to all of this, the most successful TV show for a superhero was Smallville at 10 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And they got the JSA, they got a couple of things, they played with some of the toys in the DC universe. And while you could argue 10 seasons is more successful than 8, not a single spinoff.
Yeah.
So, I think they should be proud of what they've done. I think this was a strong season.
Yes.
Overall, I think it was a strong show overall. And I'm definitely looking forward to the Arrowverse continuing for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think the real question is going to be, can they keep rotating in shows such that when Flash and Supergirl and Legends finally go off the air,
mm-hmm.
you know, that there's still an ongoing continuity?
Yeah.
Even if they've, you know, retooled it, reset it a few times through a Flashpoint, a Crisis, or what have you. So, any other kind of highlights, either of this episode or the season or the show?
I don't think so. What about for you?
Again, when they were showing some of the flashbacks and all of that, just to remember how much story they've covered over those 8 years.
Yeah.
How easy it is to forget, you know, the different villains they've had over the seasons, all the different heroes they've cycled in and out, and just how long ago it seems. Like, I mean, seeing Ragman here again for the first time in a few seasons.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it was an epic scope in a show that continued to evolve and mature and reinvent itself. Because I think you could probably go with at least two or three different lineups of Team Arrow.
Yes, definitely.
With Ollie being the only kind of constant. And that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
So I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. And I'm curious, again, if these characters continue to get used in the coming years in the other shows.
Yeah. It'll be interesting if any of them go visit the other shows, even as guest stars.
I think they should at some point.
Yeah.
You know, something comes up where it's, hey, you know, if we could only, you know, had so-and-so's expertise. Well, you know, I happen to have them on speed dial or whatever.
Yeah.
Even if the actors don't show up, just getting some references from, you know, Cisco or Gambi or whomever.
Yeah.
That they've stayed in touch and whatnot. So we'll see what happens. Short season, but solid season.
Yeah, I agree.
So anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.